Every Wednesday, we feature a segment with the local peace community. This week, the U.S. opened its embassy in Jerusalem as part of an ongoing protest calling for the right to return. Demonstrators massed at the border with Israel. Israel opened fire, killing more than 50 individuals and wounding several thousand. Joining us to discuss these developments is Karen Cormelli. Karen is a Palestinian rights activist working with the Albany chapter, Jewish Voice for Peace, and the Palestinian Rights Committee. So over the past 4 years, she's helped organize vigils, protests, film screenings, and guest speakers in the capital region. She was raised in Israel and has both United States and Israeli citizenship. So Karen, can you give us a brief overview of the recent massacres, including the United States' response to the large number of killings?
Sure, and thank you for having me on, but it is very disturbing to be here under these kinds of circumstances. It's important to note that the massacres that we saw on Monday, which is the day that the U.S. officially moved its embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, are part of a much longer ongoing resistance of Palestinians. They've been resisting their occupation and dispossession for 70 years since the establishment of the State of Israel. So this most recent longer campaign called the March of Return has been in action since March 30th from Land Day up until the Nakba Day, which is the day where Palestinians remember the day of their dispossession or the day of the establishment of the State of Israel. So the timing sort of coincided with the U.S. moving the embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem to celebrate that day while the Palestinians were mourning that day as they do every year. So on Monday, we saw the number is actually closer to 61 people that were shot and killed by Israeli snipers. We saw children that were killed, many of them in their early teens. We also saw an 8-month-old baby girl who died of tear gas inhalation. We saw reporters, photographers, and paramedics that were shot at. And it's very important to remember that these are not clashes, and this is also not really a border. A border is what you have between two countries. This is a fence that's been erected around the besieged Gaza Strip. There is a large buffer zone between that fence and what is actually considered the State of Israel. And so the demonstrators, and the numbers are tens of thousands of people. So these were families and young people who were gathered approaching that fence. Some of them were very far back, and they were still shot at.
Now, UN Human Rights Chief Zayed Raad al-Hussein has called for those responsible for the shocking killing of dozens to be held accountable. Do you see any chance in that?
Well, I would love to see accountability, and Palestinians would certainly love to see justice. But unfortunately, the U.S.'s history of supporting Israel unconditionally, in spite of a number of human rights violations, would appear to show that this is not really going to change. So the U.S. has veto power in the UN Security Council. And while the recent events on Monday drew a lot of condemnation from different countries, Turkey withdrew their ambassador, South Africa withdrew their ambassador from Israel. They've received condemnation from the UK, from Britain, from Belgium, from Germany. And we've seen a number of fantastic editorials from international newspapers, not from the US, unfortunately. We actually had we've had a number of UN officials condemn the events of Monday, and the UN Security Council met on Tuesday with a statement that was prepared by a Kuwaiti representative calling for a probe into the deaths and called for an independent and transparent investigation. So the U.S., of course, used its veto power to immediately cancel that. Nikki Haley, our ambassador to the United Nations, basically is blaming all of the events and all of the deaths on Hamas. Hamas, which is the party that is in control of the Gaza Strip. She said to the U.N., asking her colleagues, if I asked my colleagues here in the Security Council, who among us would accept this type of activity on your border? No one would. No country in this chamber would act with more restraint than Israel has. In fact, the records of several countries here today suggest they would be much less restrained. She said that the move of the embassy reflects the will of the American people, even though we know that that's not true. A recent poll showed that 63% of Americans do not want it moved there. But because the U.S. unconditionally supports Israel financially and with its veto power in the U.N. Security Council, unfortunately, I don't see very much prospect for this unless there is more international pressure.
So you laid out the Trump, you know, administration's response, which, as you said, you know, blamed Hamas and described the protests as a gruesome propaganda attempt. Now, I did see that Bernie Sanders, Senator Sanders, had come out and issued a statement. But how has the rest of Congress reacted to it, particularly if you know anything about our, you know, three or four local congressmen here in the Capital District area?
Well, I have to look into that a little bit more. I don't know what the responses have been from the local congressman. I will say that Senator Chuck Schumer has congratulated Trump on this move of the embassy to Jerusalem, even though it's seen as a provocation. We know that none of the Democratic congressmen attended the embassy opening in Jerusalem, but Senator Schumer has congratulated Trump on this move. He sees it as the right thing. People keep saying, well, you know, every country has the right to decide where to put its embassy. Well, of course, that's absolutely not true. And the problem with Jerusalem, the contentiousness of Jerusalem, was recognized back in 1947 when the UN originally partitioned Palestine into an Israeli and Palestinian state. They intentionally left Jerusalem out of the equation. It was left as an international city with very special international status because they recognized back in 1947 its religious and political significance, and they never partitioned it to Israelis or Palestinians. Israel occupied that part of West Jerusalem in the 1948 war, and then again occupied or unified Jerusalem in 1967. So the U.S. moving its embassy to Jerusalem is really just an insult to Palestinians who have been working towards establishing a Palestinian state for years, and it's contrary to U.S. foreign policy, which has stipulated that there would be a Palestinian state at some point and that its capital would be in East Jerusalem. But because Israel doesn't see West and East Jerusalem, they only see one city, and now the U.S. has put its embassy there, it really is just kind of a final nail in the coffin of any kind of two-state solution.
You seem to have been alluding to the next question, which is the Trump administration is saying that the you know, we're talking about the movement of the embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, and it's all about that and the reason for the protests. But do you think the Palestinians were trying to accomplish something beyond that, like with their campaign to return to a homeland?
Yes, absolutely. Palestinians resist every single day of their lives by not leaving their by not giving up, by not going to a different country, by not disappearing off the face of the earth. That is Palestinian resistance. By having children, by having jobs, by farming, by being alive, Palestinians resist. And they do that within the West Bank and Gaza, and they also do that in the diaspora. We have lots and lots of Palestinians who are working internationally to try to bring attention to this issue. So, you know, one of the questions that I see people saying, well, what were they trying to do by crossing the border? Very simply, cross the fence and go back to their homes that they were expelled from 70 years ago. So many of the people within Gaza, about 70% of Gaza is comprised of internally displaced refugees, which means that while they are Palestinian, they are not from the Gaza Strip. They are from Haifa. They are from Tel Aviv. They are from those areas that were ethnically cleansed in 1948, and they had to flee to one area, which was Gaza. So a lot of the people in Gaza have keys, they have deeds, they have documents proving the ownership of their homes and of their lands within Israel proper. And so the simple act of resistance is literally to walk to your homeland. And that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to get international attention to this issue, which keeps getting ignored. It keeps getting pushed down the road. And unfortunately, you know, the people who were alive and living in these homes are dying. They have children who are descendants, but they need to make the case now, and the international community needs to act now.
We're talking with Karen Carmelli, and we introduced you as being with Jewish Voice for Peace. And, in fact, you were raised in Israel, and you have Israeli citizenship. Are you atypical of people raised in Israel on how, you know, how do the people you grew up with in Israel feel about this whole situation?
Sadly, I am atypical. The left or the peace camp in Israel has really been diminished and squashed over the years, and Israel has drifted farther and farther to the right and more, and has become more authoritarian and more fascist, frankly. Everyone in Israel, Jewish citizens of Israel, are drafted into the military right after they complete high school. And so you have this indoctrination into this very militaristic, very chauvinistic society at a very young age. And that's really where people's nationalistic opinions are formed between the ages of 18 and 21 or so. These are the people who are being sent to combat zones. And their first interactions with Palestinians are really in a military capacity, where you would have a 19-year-old Israeli soldier, with you know, automatic weapons and gear and all kinds of things, you know, versus a Palestinian farmer maybe trying to get through a checkpoint. That's the first interaction that Israelis and Palestinians have. So it really does shape your opinion. And unfortunately, there are not enough people who are speaking out against this. But one group that is doing fantastic work is called Breaking the Silence. And they're a group of former Israeli combat soldiers who tell their stories and tell of what they did in Gaza during, 2014 and 2008, 2009. Just to show the world what Israeli soldiers, what kind of acts Israeli soldiers are committing, and trying to get attention to the plight of Palestinians.
Well, we're basically out of time, but I understand that this Friday there's going to be a demonstration in Albany at the Federal Building. Could you maybe tell people a little bit about that? And if they're concerned about this, how do they both connect with Jewish Voice for Peace or the local Palestinian Refugee Committee? And, you know, how can they contact their congresspeople or senators?
Right. So we are meeting at the Federal Building in Albany on Friday. That's the 18th of May at 4 p.m. We'll be there for a couple of hours. And we chose the Federal Building because we want to draw attention to the fact that Senator Schumer has applauded the move of this embassy and really has blood on his hands as far as we see it. To connect with Jewish Voice for Peace, look up Jewish Voice for Peace Albany on Facebook or the Palestinian Rights Committee of the Upper Hudson Peace Action. We're part of Upper Hudson Peace Action. You can find that information on Facebook, or you can email prcalbany@gmail.com.
Well, thank you, Karen.
Thank you.